Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Saturday, super gay, gather round. We'll get your video friends together. Yes, Saturday, super gay, it's time for fun, and no one else can do it better. And it feels so right because it's super gay time. Let's have some super gay fun.
Well, then, what do you know about a book called Sinusfeld?
Jesus Christ,
I've never heard of that.
No. Hey, everybody, welcome to Knowing Is Half the Podcast with special guest Delvin Cox. Yes, Delvin is in the house. Gina is not. She's furious about it, but she's not here.
I don't think Gina is very upset about missing any of the cartoons we watched today.
Probably not. She'll miss me though. She likes me kind of. She tolerates me.
She's going to miss the commercials. Is the thing
the commercials?
Okay, that is true.
Let's not tell her about this.
Okay.
However. My genius idea is this is a long ass cartoon. It's a full hour, so there's like four segments in it. So you're gonna get the first half here on the feed, and then if you want to listen to the second half, you're gonna have to go to Patreon.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
Look at that. I'm a marketing whiz. I'm like Barney Todd, the circus guy.
Well, we'll get into that. We'll get into that well on Patreon later, I believe. So,
on guitar?
Yeah, this is very exciting. So, first off, hi, I'm Ray Stacanis of Knowing Is Half the Podcast, and joining us is the host of the Delvin Cox Experience. Many times has he come on the Who Would Win show as a judge. He's one of our favorite people in the entire world. If you don't know him, you should. It's Delvin Cox, everybody.
I love this freaking show. So happy to be back here, man. This is a blast. This is one of my favorite shows to listen to. It's always great being on here with Chan.
Perfect.
Thank you for introducing me, which Ray neglected to do.
You started the show. You have to introduce yourself. I don't make the rules.
That's a good point.
You literally do.
He does.
I mean, I do. Yes. That being said, look, we asked for a lot of Patreon suggestions. And we looked back at previous suggestions because we wanted to start doing more things for Patreon, get more episodes in the feed, and we wanted to have more crazy different things that the people want to hear. And so we looked back and we did Dragon Warrior not too very long ago. That was a previous suggestion from a little while back, but we had never done it, and I wanted to do it, and me and Chan loved it. Yeah. Wonderful episode of a cartoon. And then Delvin Cox came in with, we should watch the Saturday Supercade, I believe it's called, from 1984.
Yes.
And we look at it, it's an hour long, and it is four 15-minute segments, basically. Each one is a cartoon, a Ruby Spears cartoon, based off of a video game of that era, 1984, or video game. Well, no, they are all video games. Never mind.
They're all video games, Jason.
Yeah.
First off, let's talk about how Delvin Cox, supposed super fan Delvin Cox, who listens to the show all the time, picks an hour-long cartoon, which is something we never, ever,
that's
ever do.
It's the other reason Gina's probably not here.
Oh, yeah. Pretty gotcha. Much. No. When we're like, how about a 23-minute? No!
No! Yeah, it's anything over 22, she's out.
21 with the commercial breaks taken out.
I feel like I picked this because, one, I vividly remember watching this as a child. Like, this is like a series. I think this happened. This was like one series, like one season or something like that.
I feel like the Donkey Kong either spun off of this or was solo, and then I feel like there was more on either side of this show.
Yes.
Oh, snap. So, guys, Saturday Supercade was ran for two seasons on CBS. Each episode is comprised of, it's not the same four cartoons every single time.
That's correct.
It is four. They are different properties that sort of spin around. One of the writers, the first one listed, Buzz Dixon, ladies and gentlemen.
Of course.
We need to find a Buzz Dixon from Saturday Supercade. Also listed, Paul Dini. If you know, you know, Batman the Animated Series.
Never heard of it.
So there are, you know, there is talent involved in these, is what I'm trying to say. The overall segments. Now, here's the deal. The four that we have, the four that we're going to watch, the two for this episode is the Qbert cartoon show. And then Space Ace, which got me very, very excited. I was a big fan of the Space Ace game. And then the next two episodes for the Patreon is going to be Kangaroo and Donkey Kong. Yes, Donkey Kong is the hero of the show. I guess it's very confusing. We will talk about it for sure. That being said, the other shows that got rotated are Frogger, Pitfall Harry, Donkey Kong Jr., and that's it. It was just those seven. So there you go.
A lot. That is a lot.
It's a lot to spin between. Yeah.
Did any of them?
I remember this very well because I was a huge, even now, a huge Space Ace fan as a kid. And I used to like go pay, I think it was $1 to play the game back then.
Jesus.
Yeah. It was a lot. No, for the kids at home. well, here's the deal. We're not Space Ace is the second cartoon. We'll discuss that when we get there, and I'll explain because I also was a massive fan. But there's no point in talking about it now. We'll talk about it when we get there.
Save it. We got to make
Delvin Cox. You watched this,
yes?
And this got you excited?
No.
Okay.
This is one of the things that I remembered as a kid loving, and then as an adult watching it now, I'm like, why did I like this?
Okay, I'm coming back around on Delvin here because that is how that is the initial concept of this podcast was we would watch things that we remember enjoying very much as kids and seeing if they hold up. Most of the time, they do not.
They do not. I will say though that the voice talent, there was a lot of G.I. Joe voice talent.
There's a lot of talent. In this. Period.
Yeah, there's a ton of, look, I'm just looking at the list here from Wikipedia by itself, and we have Soupy Sales, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, well-known G.I. Joe. He played Duke.
I'm just talking about famous people. I dare you. We got Frank Welker, obviously.
I challenge you to reach out and see how many people that listen to the show remember Soupy Sales.
Oh, I guarantee more than you would think because we a bunch of olds. But also you got Arthur Burghart, Destro, Peter Cullen, Optimus Prime, Pat Fraley, millions of roles.
You're going to skip right over. You're going to talk about
Nancy Cartwright.
Thank you.
There you go.
Nancy Cartwright is also legend. On there as well. Yeah, from The Simpsons and lots of other people. Bell's I don't recognize here. Every name, but dude, how many do you need to recognize? It's huge.
Like Tress McNeil. Don Messick.
Michael Bell. Michael Bell, Duke.
I
saw him in there too.
Ernest and then.
Oh, well, I also agree. Michael Bell was in there. Oh my God. Soupy Sales is the one who voices Donkey Kong.
Oh.
Did you see the name and not look over like a quarter inch to the right to see what he played?
Oh, stop. Of course I didn't.
No way.
And Mario was played by Peter Cullen. Yo, this Donkey Kong episode is bananas. And I said that on purpose.
You did not.
Yes, it is.
I didn't. I started to say it and I realized what I was saying. And I'm like, no, that actually works.
Yeah.
So Saturday morning Supercross. I mean, look, and one thing I wrote here is a lot of these old ass video games are all delightful. And I will say so many of them are easily realized as terrible cartoons.
Yes, very much so. And the crazy thing is, I remember loving all these games. So when this came out, when I was a kid, I was like, this is amazing. All the games I used to love to play on the Atari 2600 and in arcades are cartoons to watch and enjoy and eat my cartoon cereal with.
That is
a lot of these had cereal. That was
this all checks out, but I have never in my life heard of Kangaroo.
No, I've never heard of Kangaroo either. The one I didn't know.
I might have Kangaroo in my house.
What?
It's an Atari 2600/7800 game where you play a kangaroo trying to save your baby kangaroo from snakes and you're punching them.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. I could tell there was a lot of that going on in there. Now, this is to historically put this in context, this came out in 1984. Nintendo Entertainment System, which featured Super Mario Brothers, Legend of Zelda, a lot of the original classics, didn't come out till 1985.
Correct.
So we're talking about the, again, as Delvin said, the Atari 2600, where it was just big old blocky stuff, and it was a lot of fun. Great system. I remember it.
Also, arcade cabinets, though, because it is an Atari game, and so, you know.
And Space Ace was a cabinet game in arcades, yes.
That is correct.
Which, yeah, we'll get into that. But so our first one here, because I didn't really understand what we were watching until I got too into it. I was like, oh, they're both video games.
How? Oh, Jesus Christ. I thought that we would get in a guest and you would be on your best behavior. You'd be like, you know what? I'm gonna do my research. I'm gonna come in. I'm gonna look like a badass in front of my good friend Delvin here.
Absolutely,
to pretend like I know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Stop, Robert Clark Chan.
I waited till the second segment before I realized you should know video games. Sesame Supercade. That must mean it's super and it's okayed.
Let me talk to you about Madam Web for a second.
No. Absolutely not.
Oh my goodness. All right. So yeah, it's all video. I didn't know Kangaroo. I didn't know that was a video game. So that's what kind of threw me when I was watching the intro. Chan. Mm-hmm. You didn't know either. So what's up?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I figured it out based on context clues.
Yes, as did I eventually.
You know what messed me up? In the intro, they show like this almost like Space Invaders game.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, is there a Space Invaders cartoon that's on this?
There was not.
There was not. Like, I don't remember that at all. Like, oh no.
But somebody got paid. Somebody got a fat check to have the little Space Invaders logos up there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Space Invaders is huge back then. I mean, Donkey Kong's here. I didn't know who Kangaroo was. Q-Bert, I'm like, I'm down with Q-Bert. And then I saw Space Ace was in this, and I just went, F. Yes. Space Ace should have been a proper cartoon based on the property. So I was excited to see what they do with it. I was a little less excited after I watched it, but I'm just happy that it exists. The other cool thing is in the Donkey Kong cartoon, as I figured out from watching, this is the intro. This is pre-Super Mario Brothers, which means Mario, in the context of the Donkey Kong cartoon, and this might have been the very first iteration of Mario in a cartoon, I have to assume, and he's like the villain of the cartoon, and that is fabulous.
Yes.
Also, and that is all we're going to say about it. We're going to save the rest for the...
That's right. Thank you for reminding me.
So Delvin, if you're about to say something, zip it.
Save for Patreon.
Make a note.
Gotta pay for that.
We'll get your money.
So, we open up with our first commercial break, and Delvin Cox writes to me, and he says, Ray, if you recognize the celebrity in the Oreo commercial to start.
I wrote it in my notes. Is that Emmanuel Lewis?
Oh, my
Amazingly,
God.
That is exactly what I said as well, but I believe... It's actually Jaleel White, isn't it?
Yes. I was shocked. Neither one of you got this.
What?
Yes. That's Jaleel White.
That is Urkel, a.k.a. voice of Sonic the Hedgehog in the old comic. My first thought was, it's Emmanuel Lewis, and it's because that one of those first shots is he just looks like Emmanuel Lewis, and the more I watched it, I was like, that's not Emmanuel Lewis, but I'm going to tell Delvin it is anyway.
I see the eyes. Oh, my God. That is crazy. Well, how did you know this? Where is this information disseminated?
Well, I knew it because I watched Family Matters. I want to say when he did the commercial, we were the same age.
Because
He had like 4 or 5 back then.
Yeah, he was a big time commercial actor before he got a lot. I mean, a lot of these younger actors started in commercials because where else are you going to, like, in order to get a big TV show, you don't usually just come from absolutely nothing. They have to know you can go a little bit first. So that's all these kids from these commercials that get cast in it. And let's face facts, he's very photogenic. He's so photogenic, Chan, and no one else thought he was Emmanuel Lewis.
I mean, you put Emmanuel Lewis next to Jaleel White, both the same age, and you tell me who's cuter.
It's hard to tell because Emmanuel Lewis never grew.
That is true.
I mean,
very true.
So he
30-year-old Emmanuel Lewis would be much cuter than 30-year-old Jaleel White. I'll just say that right now.
Wow.
Same height.
You gotta hate.
Oh, who's hating? I'm giving him all the props.
Uh-huh.
You said he
wasn't cute. How dare you?
Jaleel White, not as cute as Emmanuel Lewis. I'll say it. Both adorable, though. Especially at that age. Anyway, second commercial is for Barbie Dream Furniture. I don't have a lot to say about this. My kid's really into Barbie right now. The Barbie movie helped. She's got some Barbies there in our front room of our new house. It's delightful. Gotta love some Barbies.
I will say this. Wasn't too impressed with the furniture.
I was about to say the same thing. I was about to say, I remember these toys. Not just these, but like later on too. I'm like, these look jankier than I remember.
Yeah.
Like I remember there being just like these gorgeous, amazing things on the commercials. And, you know, probably when you actually get them from the store, you're like, oh, well, this isn't as, you know, like I'm sure the USS flag was probably pretty junky. I feel good.
You
about
were absolutely
that.
Not correct. Like, this is a marvel. Sure.
The real.
And, I mean, it's amazing that you're talking about, man, when I imagined it, it was a lot cooler than it was in real life. And yet here we are talking about a show about Atari 2600 games.
That is true.
Think about it. I saw actually just a meme like an hour ago, and it was just like box art today, and it's like garbage, and it's like box art in the 8-bit and before era, and it's like the Mona Lisa, because the artwork on the box had to do a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah.
The experience you were about to have with a bunch of dots shooting other dots that are slightly smaller at each other.
Pretty much.
So there you go. And our third one, Hershey's Kisses. And it's just, we don't really get candy commercials anymore. I mean, I don't remember seeing the last time I saw a candy commercial. The 80s maybe was just peak sugar. I don't know.
Only during like Halloween time you get candy commercials.
Yeah, that's fair. And Easter time, I guess, I probably should be expecting to see some. But like,
I don't count that because there's usually Peeps. Like, fuck that. No,
it's Peeps. It's Cadbury cream eggs. That's still a thing, right?
They're delicious. Those are pretty good.
I mean, we got one in here. That tells you.
I just want to pass along. I transcribed my 6-year-old child's thoughts about this commercial.
Oh, great.
Okay. Quote, bruh, clowns are scary, unquote.
I agree.
Yeah, he's right.
Then he goes on because he's just obsessed with Amazing Digital Circus, whose main character you think is a clown. Dressed as a clown, looks like a clown, got the clown face paint. He clarified for me, I didn't ask, but he clarified for me that Pomni's not scary because Pomni's a jester, and jesters are not clowns.
Okay.
Clowns are clowns.
He's correct.
So you're telling me I should hold back on giving your kid my Insane Clown Posse music collection.
Here's the thing. I can never tell when he's being on the level and when he's just doing it to be dramatic, because he says these things and then 10 minutes later he's like, clowns are the best thing ever. I'm like, oh Christ.
Well, to be fair, Ray, I think Violent J may be a jester, so you might be able to get away with it.
He's a juggler, and I don't know, you know, it's not a juggalo. He is also that. But I think his archetype, or should I say his specialization to go Dungeons and Dragons with it, is the juggler.
I'll say. There you go.
Have you ever seen him? Is there photo evidence of him juggling?
You know what? Not that I've ever seen, but he's talked about it so much, I just naturally assumed he had that skill set.
So this is essentially like the Chamberlain 100-point game where no one ever seen anything of it. There's no photo evidence of it. He just said he scored 100 points. We just supposed to believe him.
This is deep with us.
You know what? Next thing you'd be telling me he didn't bed 30,000 women over his life as well.
There's no video of it.
I mean, thankfully.
Considering the amount, the percentage of his life in which he was beddable, I think that it's highly unlikely.
Somebody did the math on it, and they said, if we assume, I remember this because I read about this vividly back in the day because I was fascinated by the claim, and it said, if we assume that he started getting it on at the age of 16
okay,
and kept going all the way And we give him credit for everything he did after he made the claim as well. We're just going to claim a lifetime of it.
Okay.
And if we claim to when he was not functional anymore, we'll say
70.
That he 70. Would have had to reach his number. He would have had to do 1.6 a day, every day, for his entire life between those periods of time.
I mean,
it feels like a lot to me. It feels like a lot.
Given the rock star lifestyle, I imagine that you could you could bunch them up and do like three or four at a time, you know, on the weekends maybe, so it's not too overwhelming.
You could tell that Gina's not here.
That's a good point. I was going to ask, how does orgies count in this? Like if there's 10 people in the orgy, does that count? Like, yeah, we'll might be fudging them numbers a little bit.
Speaking of orgies, Q-Bert, ladies and gentlemen. Q-Bert, a game where you play an alien pig-nosed monster that jumps on blocks and changes them into other colored blocks. Could I hear a little bit of this theme song? I was a little bit fascinated by this cartoon.
You and Q-Bert, me and you.
When I think of Q-Bert, and I don't know exactly where you take this. Look, a lot of creativity had to go in just conceptualizing a lot of these shows, right? All of them, I would say, except for Space Ace, don't give you a lot to work with, right?
Correct.
I would not have expected 1950s Happy Days theme with greasers.
And socius, yeah.
And yeah, I would have not taken it in that direction, and that's why I don't write Q-Bert cartoons. This episode is called Dog Day Dilemma, and I got many questions as we go along, but how did you guys feel about the 1950s vibe of Q-Bert?
I mean, I remember this because we have done an episode of Q-Bert.
Yes, we have.
It was a Thanksgiving episode, so like one of these little episodelets. Was Thanksgiving themed, and they were still, yeah, like 50s high school kids, but they were telling a story or like doing a history lesson, and so then we're like whisked back into the world of like the pilgrims. So that's just a lot of hats on hats on hats.
It definitely is, yes.
Just this one hat, not great. Not great, but it was the 80s and we had Happy Days and everybody loved the 50s back if we ignored all of the bad stuff, you know.
Yeah, like the racism.
Yep. Wait, there was racism in the 50s? I didn't learn about that in school.
They wasn't too fond of the blacks.
Oh, turns out. Oh, my gracious. So what do we got? We got Q-Bert. We've got Coily the Snake, who is his arch enemy, the purple snake.
That's in the game.
He's in the game. Yep, it's in the game. And they are both, this is just, I don't even know where to go. This plot is just beyond my comprehension. The idea behind this story, here's where we're going. Both Q-Bert and Coily the Snake both have apprenticeships. They have internships at this dog grooming contract work job. And only one of them is going to get the full-time job. So they're both trying to impress somebody named Q Boss. So I think our little bit of nepotism already at play here, to be honest with
no,
you.
No, like the gimmick is everything is Q blank because you got like a Q poodle and what all. But also like, yeah, is there only one manager in this entire world?
Yeah. Why Pretty is he much. The one Q Boss? Also, there's a theme here
this world.
Where Q-Bert's friend wants him to groom his dog for free. And we get the first instance of him asking for this feat right here up top. And Q-Bert's like, I got to get to work or people will pay me money in order to wash their dogs. I will not wash your dog for free.
This was a running gag that would have been enjoyable if they had done something with it and or stuck the landing. None of which they did.
No, were you not waiting for like the winning thing to be because of this dog? Didn't it make sense just the way he's pressuring him that like it turns out that his friend is like the son of the owner and that's what would impress him when it was when he finally breaks down and washes the dog or something to that effect?
You would think that. They didn't think that.
They obviously did not think that. So the first gag is Cube Boss says you have to wash Tiny. Tiny ends up being a big, gnarly, angry dog. And Coily doesn't want to do it. He says, Cubert, you go first. They both struggle. Nobody really gets it done. And this is when I had a sudden realization. This goddamn snake has two arms.
I feel like you already knew this. I feel like you complained about this last time.
I don't remember. I remember we did, Cubert. I don't remember a single thing about it. I might have to go back and listen to that episode. This snake should not have two arms. I would rather have the invisible arms of the VeggieTales than have legitimate arms on a snake.
I believe that is what is referred to as a naga.
It's not a snake anymore.
South Asian mythology.
Naga gonna be working here anymore.
Jesus.
I'm so proud of
Almighty
myself.
Almighty.
You shouldn't
Christ.
Be.
I'm going to ignore that and ask the question that I should have asked at the very beginning of this, which is, why does a juvenile delinquent want a job this bad? Isn't the whole point of juvenile delinquency to, like, go fuck off and break things?
Yes.
Yeah,
I would only argue he wants the job so bad because Cubert wants the job so bad. And if he can hurt Cubert in some way, his pettiness is so strong, he would work a dog grooming job if it meant Cubert was sad for but one day.
So this is much like how Hangman Page tapped out to Samoa Joe just so Swerve Strickland wouldn't win the title in AEW.
You know what? I wasn't on board until you spoke to me in my language.
I also watch AEW.
I am not familiar with this. Is that the wrestling?
I offered you. I said, "Come on over," and you were like, "No, I have to sit around the house and watch paint dry."
Yeah, could have watched Sting retire.
Mm-hmm.
Good match.
Good, shockingly good match. Every match he has is. At some point, I should not be surprised anymore. Yet every time I'm surprised that happens. Yes.
Also, Ric Flair got kicked in the face, so that made me happy.
Who doesn't love that? I love it.
At this point, Q Boss has a separate task. They haven't even finished the first task. He's like, stop that. And now you have to go to Mrs. Cumont and take care of her dog, as I guess apparently they're also a mobile cleaning unit of some kind.
I mean, this was the 80s when, house calls were a thing.
Sure. I guess wait until they wash Tiny first, but I guess he never actually cared about that. That was a troll, I guess.
That was a test.
They both show up at the mansion where she is having some sort of a dinner party or something in the yard. It's a weird time to be going to wash the dog, but the good guys get dirty. The bad guys blow exhaust on the good guys in the parking lot. And in a move that astounded, confounded, and in many ways upset me, Cubert caused his nose to go basically unhinged and then vacuumed all the dirt off of himself with his own nose.
Yes. Which is...
I'm sorry, is there a problem here?
That is horror. That was body horror. That was upsetting. All the dirt is now just in his body as opposed to outside of it. I was horrified by what
Cubert's
I saw. Cubert's
very fun at parties, to say the least.
That is the 80s.
That is a great point.
80s. If you'll remember a little movie called Heavy Metal.
I do. Where a very
similar gag was played out. I can't imagine what cocaine would make these people cocaine think that would be a cocaine good joke to cocaine tell, but
did not like it. At this point, Coily the snake throws Cubert into the punch bowl.
Also, hold on, did he snort the others clean as well?
No, just himself.
Okay. Hmm.
I guess the others snorted themselves clean.
Oh,
and I'll be honest, Cubert. is not naked, and he also has arms in this, which he does not in the game, if I remember correctly. And he's also wearing like a varsity jacket.
Because he's cool.
It's delightful. I don't know why. I love this look for Qbert. I think he looks good. They just want to put my two cents. Good fashion sense, Qbert.
I don't know that any of us are going to be backing you on this one.
Not even a little bit.
Wow. All right, fine. Well, Qbert's sitting in the punch bowl, and we get the second instance of, can you please wash my dog for free? This guy is following around Qbert on his internship day, asking him to take time out from his tasks to wash his dog repeatedly. At a certain point, I wished violence upon this Qbert adjacent fellow.
As you should. That is awful. Don't ask me to do that.
Did not make me happy. It's like, he has a job. Leave him alone, other guy whose name I do not know. Asking for free labor.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there was a joke that really paid this whole thing off.
No.
That got cut.
There was no jokes to be had in this whole episode.
No. Oh, Cham. Oh, we are. Please, you got to think of 4D, 5D chess. This joke will pay off.
Mm-hmm.
It will pay off. I promise.
In a later episode of Saturday Supercade.
Yes. I wish.
A month later.
At the end of this episode, it pays off. Now, you might argue, how much does it pay off? But it pays off. Look, when Qbert gets thrown in the punch bowl, he does the swearing bit. And I love it. I love that Qbert swears like a sailor.
I mean, that was far and away the best part of the game. So it makes sense that they would bring it back for the cartoon.
And can we hear what it sounds like when Qbert swears? Because it's still delightful. That is a lot. I mean, he said some shit.
Yeah. Yeah. He went on at length.
Yeah. That was not just like a word or two. That was an entire stanza. Exactly.
Wait a minute. Who's rolling up D&D characters?
I
Delvin
wish.
Cox, are you playing Final Girl while we're recording?
I wish I was.
Because you get extra points if you're doing that. Anyway, here's the point. Here's my biggest confounding point of the entire episode. If we take the plot at face value, that Coily the Snake and Qbert, the lovable scamp, are both interning for this contract job to get a full-time position as dog groomers, and they both must prove their mettle, prove how good they are at this task. One of them will get the job based on how well they do. Why on God's green earth did the owner continually send them both out on the same goddamn tasks? Why would you not send them on different tasks where you could objectively check out their work and make a proper decision on why and how they do the job? Why would you continually send them both on the same job where it just becomes a matter of who can punch the other harder, a skill that it should not be necessary in a dog grooming context?
Again, I'm going to plead the 80s, site of the well-known game show American Gladiators.
I mean, fantastic, fantastic. Daniel, coming back on BBC.
If you could, on BBC?
BBC's what? Bringing it back, Chan.
The British Broadcasting Corporation?
That is correct.
I hope so, because the other BBC, bringing back American Gladiators might be a problem.
That is a very different show that you're talking about, Delvin. And this is a family program, I'll have
adjacent.
You know.
Family program adjacent.
About big black cocks like that. So,
yep, you didn't have to, but there you went.
Yeah, he did. I love Chan for it.
Chan, we're going to lose Chan for the next 10 minutes as he goes down a rabbit hole looking into the BBC American Gladiators. So
all of the different varieties, the British and otherwise.
I mean, look, I have nothing more to add to that. I will say.
Now, I guess we've seen that why they call him Nitro now.
Oh boy, Thunder takes on a whole new definition. Huh. Anyway. They go to this lady in order to clean her dog. The dog gets scared by all of this commotion and runs away. So now the task becomes Qbert and Coily having to chase the dog and catch it as part of their duties still doesn't feel like this is what grooming dogs is all about. And again, Delvin, talk to me about this because Chan's gone for the next few minutes. She seems like she lives on a palatial estate on the outskirts of town. The dog runs away. They chase after, and immediately they are in heaviest part of New York City downtown traffic.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened, but they got there.
There is either a gigantic gap between them leaving the estate and arriving at the intersection, or she lives in a much noisier area than I gave her credit for.
She lives in like the Bronx or something like that.
It's crazy. Yeah, here we go. So they chase the dog in traffic to a department store, at which point Qbert's friend does part three of, hey, will you clean my dog for free? It is not the time, Rufus. And I don't know if his name is Rufus, but his name is now Rufus.
It will be Rufus today.
Stop. Why? Leave me alone. You don't even have to be following me.
It's a lot of iterations of this running gag for just a 15-minute cartoon.
Too many times. You know, I would argue that the most recent G.I. Joe we watched that cuts back to Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes fighting no less than five different segments on the show. It's the rule of fives now. It's not rule of three anymore, Chan. It's rule of fives.
Kind of wondering if it isn't just filler. Like, oh, God, we're 30 seconds short on this cartoon. Tell you what. Just throw in like four more of this guy coming up asking to clean his poodle.
Yeah, it's insane.
Might be.
So they're chasing the dog through this department store, and Q Poodle, because that's of course his name, her name, Q Poodle.
She
jumps out to run away from them. She jumps out an upper floor window of the department store, and my immediate first thought was, "Oh no, Vladimir Putin got her."
Yeah, they did try to stab it with an umbrella earlier, so it sort of makes sense.
Yeah, a lot of polonium in this dog for some reason.
I could imagine Putin sitting around watching 80s cartoons going, hey, you should try that. That looks like it works. Looks like
I work for KGB now, but also I like Saturday Supercade. This is what I like. You know what? I like the jam of this Qbert.
Jam of this Qbert?
Like the jam of this Qbert.
The jam of this
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. The jam of this Qbert.
And here we are, because part three isn't far enough in our rearview mirror. Work on my dog for free. Part four, as they arrive chasing the dog, because the dog's fine, by the way. They're all just, there's a really awkward moment that honestly, I did laugh out loud. Because the dog jumps out the window of like the third, fourth floor of this department store. And there's like a moment of quiet as they're all just like, ooh. And I laughed. I was just like, that is wonderful. The dog is of course fine. It landed on like, I don't know, a window wiper, like, you know, cart thing that they hang on the side of the bill. I don't know. It was fine. It runs to an abandoned amusement park. It's not abandoned. It's a real amusement park. And it's currently riding and apparently has very lax gate keepers, because everybody just runs on in. And then this Qbert cartoon, an absolutely wild thing happens just over and over again. The logic of this cartoon is insane to me, because the dog jumps on a rocket ship swing ride. You know, the one that is a big cylinder in the middle and that has a bunch of rocket ships on it. And then, you know, it spins and the rocket ships go up and down. You've been on that. You have had fares. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Universal got one of those, and you actually push the lever, and you go up, you pull the lever, and it goes down, right. Which is great.
Honestly, very fun, especially your younger kids. The dog jumps into one of the cars, and Qbert and his friend go, we have to catch that dog. Better jump into the car behind it.
Good idea. Good logic.
The ride hasn't started yet. They could go 5 feet further along and just get the dog out of the rocket ship. But instead, we have a chase on this ride. And what's worse is all the other characters come in and fill out the cars behind them.
Yes, this is basically the climax of Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, And what makes it even, like, what takes it even further, not even 11 anymore, we're on 13, is Coily the Snake says, hurry up, we've got to make our car go faster so we can pull alongside the dog's car. That is not how this ride works.
Okay, Cubit, speed up. We got to pull up alongside Q-Poodle so I can grab him.
I just wanted to double check that that was not some fever dream that you had, because it doesn't make sense what you just said. And yet it appears that, yes, that is exactly what they said. And that is exactly how things work in this universe.
Look, I don't do drugs, but there came a point about 9 minutes into this Q-Bert episode that I swore somebody slipped me a tab of acid.
Or you probably shouldn't be doing drugs.
These things shouldn't happen. Maybe I should start.
Yeah. Maybe it would help. Doing drugs. We should give you drugs to watch this cartoon.
Oh, dear Lord. I've heavily considered, dude, knowing is half the podcast, drunk casting. The problem is the stuff me, Chan, and Gina say completely sober is already horrendous. How bad would this show get content-wise if all three of us were hammered?
I'd be worried for my friends.
Like, yeah, I just, this is what stopped me from attempting to go for it. That
would not be good.
And also, like, that is a continuing problem with this entire show. There is so little that the video game has to offer in the way of narrative that the writers, for the most part, are just so slapdash and like, fuck it, I don't know. They go to space and like there's a haunted space thing and Frankenstein's in it and they switch. Whatever. Who cares? It feels real, real bad in that way.
Yeah. It's, again, a level of creativity the writers must have had to take essentially nothing and turn it into something is amazing.
Yeah, yes. And this was...
I just don't agree with all the choices.
Like, now, you know, like, there's a Halo TV show, and, you know, they really fleshed out the story and the characters, and, you know, like, gave them something to do.
I mean, Jay, I would argue, though, that modern video games put a lot more effort into characters and story than mid-1980s pre-NES games did.
100%.
There was a rich Halo story for them to pull from. I have not actually watched the show. I got very concerned about Pablo Schreiber, aka Pornstache from Orange is the New Black, as Master Chief. And I just, as delightful an actor as he is, he is a wonderful actor. I just have a hard time seeing that guy in that part. And I think that has prevented me from watching it.
Makes sense. I think he's pretty good.
I hear the second season slaps, so I don't know.
Mortal Kombat. There's one with, you know, like there's some backstory, but does anybody follow it? It's the Outworld. It's another dimension, and we're going to have a fight.
Pretty much.
You're talking to the wrong person, Chan. I know all the story of Mortal Kombat.
I actually know all of it of the game. The game gets ridiculous. Like, yeah, once you get to 9, 10, and 11, it gets kind of crazy.
They start going into multiverse and time travel. It gets crazy.
Yeah, that's.
And then Peacemaker's there.
Oh man, amazing! RoboCop shows up at one point.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ,
it's incredible.
Sting show up to back up RoboCop.
No, Sting does not, in fact, bust him out of a cage, unfortunately, or vice versa.
Bullshit.
Chan, you don't even know the Terminator, Spawn. Who else has shown up in RoboCop and Mortal Kombat now? Freddy Krueger,
Homelander.
Mortal Kombat's gone off the rails. It's
yes.
Fortnite has officially changed video games forever. and Call of Duty Modern Warfare multiplayer, for those that don't know, is going the way of Fortnite. They just said, we're not going to tether to reality anymore. If you want to play as literally anything or anybody, just go do it. They put Homelander in Call of Duty as well.
And Nicki Minaj as well.
And I was going to say, who's the pop star? Nicki Minaj. Yeah.
Little weird, I got to say. Like, even playing Mortal Kombat as Peacemaker and killing Peacemaker is literally John Cena. So it's like, it's a little weird killing somebody who like you watch on wrestling every week.
I know that you don't believe that his name is John Cena, but I have just crafted an image in my head of John Cena in Xena Warrior Princess's leather miniskirt and chakram. And if he does not do that for Halloween, I will be the saddest puppy in the world.
We need to make this happen.
We do.
Yeah, let's start a, what do you say when all the people do the signatures and once it hits 50,000?
A petition?
No, yes, but it's the thing that the White House has to have a comment on if it ever gets above 50,000 signatures. What's that thing called? Anyway. You're not getting away this easy, Chan, because we have finished the airplane swing ride. The ride stops and everybody gets off, and now they chase to the bumper cars, and we have a car chase in the bumper cars. Yes, the dog is driving a bumper car. Well.
How can this be?
Yeah.
I don't. Look.
He's driving a car?
I just don't know anymore.
This dog never drove a car?
This one really broke my sanity. They capture him. They capture her, I should say.
Them.
And what's wonderful is Q-Bert finally captures the dog, leaves the ride. All four of our bad guys crash into each other, but it's bumper cars. They're fine. Rufus, a.k.a. Q-Bert's friend, says, I'll hold Q-Poodle to make sure nothing bad happens. And nearly immediately, Q-Poodle jumps out of his arms and runs away. So now we have to go again. We're still chasing this dog.
Well, we've still got 4 minutes of Saturday morning time to fill.
I literally shouted a giant F you at Rufus.
As you should.
Extending this cartoon further. Now they're on a roller coaster.
I mean, you need multiple instances of Q-Bert and Squiggly, Twirly. What the fuck's that dude's name?
Coily.
Jumpy, Coily. Hoppy, Skippy. Jumping on things that they can change colors on so that you remember that it's from a video game.
That's what the roller coaster is about, because they start chasing on the tracks. And when Q-Bert jumps chasing the dog on the tracks of the roller coaster, he changes some of the boards to different colors. And I was fine with that. That's great.
Yep. And then Coily falls off the very tall edge, because that's also how the game goes.
That's what happens. Yes. But before that happens, Q-Bert shoves a bunch of, near as I could tell, rabbit turds into his nose and fires them like a machine gun at his enemies.
Perfectly normal.
Yeah. Missing.
You don't shove rabbit turds in your nose and shoot over people?
Missing every shot like he was a stormtrooper in A New Hope.
Awesome. I got a strong Dune 2 vibe from this. I don't know if you've seen the Harkonnens shooting out of the ornithopters at the Fremen, but the brrrr, brrrr. So
I did. I've watched Dune 2.
A bunch of people have. So I feel like that joke / image will play for a lot of people.
Now, I haven't seen Dune 2, but I have seen Madam Web.
And hear that. Who came out the better in this deal?
Madam Web did.
Mm-hmm.
And also, who is this? I don't know. This, we introduce a character with like 2 minutes to go in the episode. Some big baby Huey looking dude. Who is this person Q-Bert runs into? He's like a giant goober Q-Bert. He's like Goobert. I did not like him.
Yeah, he feels like a regular on the show, like some friend of theirs.
It wasn't necessary.
I mean, he was escapes. Because we still had 2.5 minutes of Saturday morning time to fill.
Look, none of this matters because the dog escapes again and just runs back home by itself. And we get to about 10 feet in front of the lady. And Coily and Q-Bert both grab opposite ends of the dog and pull it till it becomes a dachshund. And the lady doesn't give a shit. I'm blown away that at no point does she go, hey, stop pulling my dog before he falls into pieces.
You'd think that would be a thing that they would mention.
Yeah, she doesn't care.
Instead, Q-Bert wins the tug of war, knocks all the baddies into the pool. And ostensibly, I guess, wins the job. He did no grooming, except she was so impressed by his ability to pull the dog away from another character that she says, I'm going to come and request only you work on my dog so you will get the job. At which point, Rufus, for part 5 of our exciting series, will you clean and wash and cut my dog's hair for free? Q-Bert says, yes, I will do that. At which point, Rufus's dog runs away, starting a whole new chasing of a dog. That pays it off, ladies and gentlemen. That pays off the bit. Pays off the bit.
It's technically does. Technically, it's the button.
Has been paid off because here we go again. Roll credits. I'm confused. I'm bamboozled by this cartoon. I don't understand any of the logic of anything that happened at any point. And I feel incredibly dumber for having watched it. Thank God we get a much more intelligent cartoon, Space Ace, coming up next.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What will the future bring from Nintendo? More hits like Super Mario Brothers. Arcade hits like Kung Fu. Nintendo has the most video game hits. Hogan's Alley, Duck Hunt, and more like Baseball and Excitebike. And you can play them only on the Nintendo Entertainment System. Now you're playing with power.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
Was that a commercial break? Did you just put a commercial break into the show?
I thought it was.
I did, yeah. Now, whether or not one shows up there, we'll see.
It definitely.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Absolutely not.
y'all remember those Levi's commercials?
I do. I had forgotten about them until I saw them. But first off, Chan, there are 3 commercials.
Yes.
Cadbury Cream Eggs is number 1.
I mean, that's one we all know, and like it still pops up.
Yes. Chef Boyardee and their various SpaghettiO knockoffs with Zuroni or ABCs and 123s. That's fine. I like that. And then Levi jeans. A lot of bits going on here. Just a lot of 3-second bits.
Yeah, it was liquid
TV. Cram them in.
What was the thing?
Like the Tarzan hitting the Levi sign and causing it to like implode.
Yeah.
And the aliens operating the genes from inside of it. It brought back memories. I like this ad.
Quality stuff there.
Yeah, I forgot. This is very 80s, to say the least.
Also, in the preview for Space Ace, Kimberly, Space Ace's female companion, says, gag me with a rocket ship. So you pretty much know exactly what we're in for here.
I mean, there was the... one of the bad guys in the previous one is also a Valley Girl.
I feel like this is the height of Valley Girl culture. Although the 90s really had the movies. When did Julie Brown make that song about the Valley Girls?
Wasn't it the 90s?
Wait a minute. Are you talking about Julie Brown or are you talking about Frank Zappa?
No, I think I'm talking about the Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun. A song that you can't do in the year 2024. Remember back in the 80s when it felt completely absurd that anyone would shoot up a school? To the point where they were making comedy songs with that as the premise. Could you believe the idea of a homecoming queen going crazy and shooting all of her classmates? Hilarious! Doesn't slap the same in a post-Columbine era. I'll tell you that.
The Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun came out in 1983.
There we go.
Good times.
Yeah, right around, right, almost the exact same time this came out. Amazing. Yeah, it's...
Like, I dig pets and junk. But is this like Freak Out City over a Bow Wow or what? Gag me with a doggy biscuit.
Jesus Christ. Like, what are we doing? This is not an archetype anymore. For a very long time when we were growing up in the 80s and early 90s, this was a character that was seen in every single thing.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. Everywhere. Very common.
The Valley Girl.
We should bring it back.
No, we should not. Look, Space Ace. Let's talk about Space Ace. This is a Don Bluth jam. If you're familiar with a video game called Dragon's Lair, this is Dirk Daring. It's one of my favorite games of all time. It's a cartoon. It's a very hard to play. It's an almost unplayable video game in that it's a cartoon where little lights will flash during the cartoon. You have to push in that direction or press a button if your weapon flashes. And the timing is ridiculously hard. You have to do a lot of anticipation, basically, and repetition, because it's a game designed to eat your quarters. Surprise. And so Dragon's Lair are very huge. They made, I think, three of them at least. And maybe just two. I don't know. But they made a few of them. And they were the biggest thing of its time. Space Ace was a follow-up property that used the same formula, except that you were a space hero. Think like, what's the, from Futurama, what's the Phil Hartman character?
Oh, you're talking about
Zap Brannigan. Thank you.
Yeah.
Space Ace is basically Zap Brannigan flying around with it. It's beautifully animated. It's Don Bluth style animation. So it's like Dragon's Lair or The Secret of Nim. It is well animated. And he is a big, tough Zap Brannigan hero fighting against the alien menace and alien horde. And the big twist of the game is that he gets zapped with something called the Infanto Ray. And the Infanto Ray turns him into a 98-pound weakling, basically. So during the game, you potentially could get hit by the Infanto Ray. They just make it so that he just keeps turning back and forth during the cartoon. You don't have to worry about him getting hit with a beam of the enemies for it. It's just part of his character now. But the idea being that there were two ways to play the same scenes, one as the big, strong hero and one as the clunky nerd.
That's correct, because when you're the big, strong hero, you're Space Ace, and when you're the nerd, you're Dexter.
That's right.
And they have two different personalities.
Yes, they're essentially two different characters who are just the same guy. And I'm into it.
Much like He-Man's supposed to be, technically.
Yeah, except they're both gigantic.
Yeah.
Prince Adam is massive. This is like if Arnold Schwarzenegger put on like a vest and you're not supposed to know he's Arnold Schwarzenegger. So, okay, this episode's called The Phantom Shuttle. And I like the premise. This is straight out of Starfield, ladies and gentlemen. I love it. There was
is
a
it?
Big
because it feels like it's straight out of Scooby-Doo.
Yes, no. It does. It does feel like Scooby-Doo a little bit.
To be fair, it's straight out of Alien is what it's straight out of.
Or some other trashy 60s Hanna-Barbera garbage.
Well, yes, but the whole idea of there being a large, oversized, derelict spaceship floating through space, sending out a distress signal, and no survivors can be found on board, is a great premise for basically anything.
That's a great premise. Yeah. What they do with the premise...
Look, I can't... I won't make apologies, except here I go making apologies. It is a great start to this episode, and it filled me with a lot of promise.
Wow.
You know what the first thing came to mind when I was watching this?
Hmm?
Damn, the game really looks better than the cartoon.
Okay. By a lot, yes.
To a crushingly disappointing amount.
Yes. I'm like, wow.
That is the one you shouldn't do. Because there is version that exists that is so much better.
It's beautiful. It's great animation, especially for its time. This is a Ruby Spears production.
Yeah.
At least I would argue that this is the best animated of the four things we watched. Agree on that?
That is, the bar is is frighteningly low for that.
It's not saying a lot to say it, but I'll at least say it. It's the best looking of all of them. And this is what confused me. I just wrote here, let's go on board the derelict vessel. What could go wrong?
I mean, he is space ace. That's sort of his jam. So, like,
fine. I'm really unclear. I'm unclear. Like, again, I'm very unclear what his role is. Is he like Bravestar, but in space? Like, he's like a marshal who
pretty much
he makes the law, or does he have like a prime directive? I don't know. I don't know. But I do know that in the original game, he got hit with the Infanto Ray into change. Here, it just sort of like energy emits from his body and it just keeps happening. And I would argue this would be one of the most annoying things that could ever happen to anyone.
I couldn't remember if that was a thing that happened in the game, that he just went at random, or if it was something that, you know, triggered it.
It's fairly random, but I believe it does get triggered. Like, because you can play both ways. You know?
I remember in the game, he originally gets hit with the Infanto Ray, and he has, at certain points, because he has a button that helps him to transform the space ace for only a short period of time.
Ah, okay.
So when you hit, okay. So when you have these certain points, you hit energize, and he becomes space ace, and that gives you a more action packed scene. Whereas in the cartoon, there is no button, so he just randomly turns into space ace and randomly turns back to Dexter at various points in time.
It's not great. I mean, you got to do the gimmick. It's the gimmick of the game.
Yeah, but like it would be more fun if it were like, he gets scared and he turns into a little guy and or big guy, or he gets water splashed on him, changes into, you know, like one or the other. Like, if you have some rules to it, it makes it easier to write a story, honestly. Yeah.
I think I would love it if, like, he has to recharge his Energizer, so he can only do it like 3 times a day.
Yeah.
And it only lasts a short period of time. So he has to save when he does it for when he thinks he needs it the most, which could and always will result in him overusing it. And in the most crucial situation at the end, he has to figure it out as Dexter. Isn't that the most compelling thing we could do with this?
That sounds solid, yeah.
That sounds solid, but...
Yeah, look, it's almost like I write shit.
Wow, it's almost like you're taking on the Gina role while she's gone.
I mean, somebody has to.
I argue that that is not the case.
Not at all.
Oh, Chen, I'm going to ask a question. I have not studied for this. Have you read through my entire packet of sketches yet?
No.
I figured you'd be bored enough at work that it would have come up that you'd at least start glancing.
Well, work's been kind of busy, but the time will come.
For the record, and I will explain this. I found, and this was the last time when we recorded the last episode of this show, I found a CD-ROM I burned in 2009 of a big vault of comedy sketches that I wrote for the stage. And I believe it's like 60 some odd sketches that I wrote. I put them in a Google Drive because Robert Clark Chan asked if he could see them. And I, sight unseen, have passed them over, and I'm aggressively nervous because I do not know, one, if any of it holds up, two, if any of it shows any actual writing talent, or three, how mercilessly Robert Clark Chan will annihilate me for some of these sketches.
I am saving it. I'm going to savor it like a fine wine. I'm going to sit down in a comfy chair, get good and loaded, and then read them.
Honestly, I don't know any better way to do it, so I think you've nailed it.
Also, Chan, anyone on the sketch that can get Ray canceled, just forward to me. It's no problem.
Okay.
Oh, well, I guarantee there's several in there.
I'm going to say about 40 to 45 of them.
Yeah, we just...
Possibly more.
Google Drive that to me.
Yeah, I'm legitimately concerned that I've made a mistake.
Oh, you should be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're on the ship and they find secret doors, ghostly voices. Is this ship haunted? I don't know. The answer is yes, sort of. They get into the control room, the bridge, if you will, and all of the apparently this spaceship is being run by a pirate's steering wheel in the middle of the bridge, which I found fascinating, as well as all the other controls. And Kimberly says, I don't understand. All of these devices are moving by themselves. And I'm like, Kimberly, have you not heard of an autopilot?
I mean, that is not how autopilot works. You don't actually have to move the controls. The computer will, you know, do it for you digitally. this is the GD future, is it not?
There is a pirate's wheel in the center of the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Pirate wheels
is
cool.
This the GD future? I don't know.
Okay, fair point. We'll find out, I guess.
Yeah, so she immediately assumes it's ghosts, which what really makes me mad is she's more correct than I am. We meet a character named Dregulon.
It took me a while. First thought I said Megalon.
I wrote Megalon first as well, yes.
I wrote Scragulon, then Dragulon, and finally, after multiple times of hearing it, I was like, ah, Dregulon.
Yeah, Dregulon.
Dig through the ditches and burn through the witches and slam in the back of my Dregulon.
I will accept that.
Not bad.
I'll take it. That's the best I'm going to do. Look, he's excited. He's caught Space Ace Dregulon. The whole thing turns out, believe it or not, the distress signal was a ruse. His plan, guys, this is another one I'm having trouble with. His plan, we'll get into the basics here. His plan is he's trying to lure a great hero onto the ship so that he may capture him and put his essence into a monster Frankenstein style that he has built, but needs like a soul.
Apparently the beast, the super beast, did I not write down? It's some sort of like ultimate super monster.
Correct.
Is run on life force. So he needs a entity to give up their life force, kind of in the same way that Dr. Frankenstein uses lightning to waken the beast. So it's not even like a soul so much as he just needs electricity.
But that's also not how it works. How he thinks it works and how he describes it, and then what actually happens are two dramatically different things.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I don't like calling writers lazy, but it does feel like they just waltz in with no regard for any kind of internal logic.
Nothing. And also, he has a young alien girl named Blotta. That took me a few tries to get right, too.
I heard Vlada.
Blotta?
Lana?
I heard Blotta. I don't know. Like, it could be Eddie. It could be Vladdy. This could be Bloody where Putin got the idea.
Putting people's
brains in monsters.
She definitely wants to fuck Dexter. Space Ace, not so much.
100%. Yeah,
not into Space Ace. Into Dexter.
Good bit. Good bit. I liked it. I approve of that. She's an alien. She's got different aesthetics.
Given what we know about this machine and the monster, why is she plugged into it at all?
It's
not even working.
Dragula is like, I need...
You know what? We're calling him Dragula for the entire rest of the episode. That's fine.
Like a Skeksis from Dark Crystal. He needs life essence. He doesn't have any Gelflings. He's going to make do with the pod people. Then like a juicy ass Jen the Gelfling comes along and is like, yeah, give me that.
And that's fine. He lets her go, I guess, and that's fine. And this Dragula has ghost guards. That's cool. You never see, this is something you don't see, is ghosts being used as henchmen. I was like, that's pretty awesome.
You don't see them because you're invisible.
Thank you. But usually ghosts are kind of their own deal. You know, ghosts don't work for other people. I like the idea of, I have two henchmen. You see robots, you see ninjas, you see big tough guys, you see whatever. You don't see ghosts as henchmen. And I liked it. Maybe there's a reason you don't see it, but I thought it was kind of cool. Also, they have the amazing gust of wind power.
I mean, aesthetically, ghosts might be cool guards. The practicalities of it is they're non-corporeal. And yeah, there's some limitations there. Especially if you're looking for security.
Yeah, they can throw some wind around, though.
Yeah. And so Space Ace and Kimberly, you know, they get accosted by the ghosts. And this, I'm so... Okay. Listen. The ghosts hit them with their patented gust of wind. They blow upwards up a stairwell and into another chamber of the ship. And to get away from the corporeal. Thank you. Ghosts. They close the door and say that should hold them. But that's not how ghosts work.
Maybe not in your universe or any universe, but in this one,
yeah.
Apparently that
ghosts are intangible. Ghosts can go through walls and doors. Why does this shutter door miraculously? Well, he does lock it. Oh well, okay.
Maybe the door has holy water on it. Jesus door.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ghosts can't go through Jesus door.
Jesus was nailed to the hatch door of the haunted shuttle.
Yeah.
So Robert Clark Chan and Delvin Cox, you are hypothesizing that the shutter doors of this alien derelict ship, many, many light years from Earth,
mm-hmm. yes,
was actually made from the wood uh-huh. of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, all right. Yeah, yeah. That's a good answer.
Tell me it's not as weird an idea as literally anything else in this cartoon.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. At least it makes sense in its own way.
At least the logic holds.
And they get through that, Space Ace and Kimberly do, and immediately are like, all right, let's just hang out here. Let's just look around. It's just like, you're not worried that they're going to... They get calm real fast. They get calm faster than I would get calm. They find a box of robot parts. They start pulling out robot parts. At which point, Dragula, who has a remote control in a hidden compartment in his chamber, for just such an occasion that a hero would go through the ship, end up in this room, and find the shelf of robot parts and start taking them down accidentally. What a plan! He presses the single button on the joystick, and the robot starts self-building itself in order to capture our heroes. This robot's name is Robo.
Fun fact, my nickname in the sixth grade, Robo.
Was it because of this cartoon?
I hope not. Man, if it turns out all this time they were just making fun of me with the Space Ace cartoon, I'm pissed.
Yeah, that may be a problem.
I mean, that's a better nickname than I had back then.
What was your nickname? Scared to ask. Never mind.
Moving forward.
No. Hold on. I thought about asking. I also thought at one point that no, we shouldn't know. He wants us to ask him.
No, I don't. I'm ready to move on.
Satisfaction.
You know what, Robert Clark Chan?
Now that I've thought about it.
That's for the patrons.
That's, you know what? You got me. Patrons, go listen to the second half of this episode and find out what Ray's nickname was in the sixth grade. You know,
my only hope is that between now and recording that segment, these two forget this ever
Absolutely
happened.
Not.
The alien girl is into young Dexter. We've been over this. Her name is Blotta. She is a delight, but also a mess at the same time. I like her. I like this character. I don't understand why she is allowed to just roam free of this derelict vessel.
Well, I mean, she is part of the domestic staff or possibly a co-pilot or...
I don't think she works there. She's just eating their food afterwards. She's been chained to a board for who knows how long.
Right. But she works there because... She's not eating that food. She's making that food.
If I remember correctly, she was the original test subject, right? And then once Space Ace got there, he was like, oh, you can go now. She's like, oh, yeah, okay, bye.
That's the whole deal is I don't get the vibe that she works for Dragula. I don't get the vibe that she was meant to be on that ship except to potentially power the machine, which obviously she is woefully inadequate to do. I thought maybe we'd get a plot twist towards the end where she turns out to be like Dracula's daughter, which makes him more insidious for even putting his own kid in the machine, but sure. also gives her a reason to not be thrown in the airlock immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't get any of that.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
It's implied. Dracula doesn't care. He's like, whatever. You can stay. You can hang around.
Let's just go to commercial. Our first commercial is GoBots, ladies and gentlemen, and specifically the Zod toy. I'm a fan. I thought this was a cool toy, a cool design. I like the fact you have a pokey stick with a hidden spot like in recent video games where you have to hit him in the chest as he pops up and that'll shut him down. I thought that was very fun.
I would not allow to like GoBots because I was a Transformers fan. That's like Bloods and Crips.
Obviously, but you had some GoBots.
No, I didn't.
Don't tell me you had no GoBots.
I had no GoBots.
Everybody had majority Transformers.
I barely had good Transformers.
All right.
Well, here's the thing. Like, you would ask your parents for Transformers. Mm-hmm. They would see a $2.49 GoBot and be like, that's the same thing, right? It's a car. It turns into a robot. Good enough. I'll get it for him. And that's how you get GoBots. Nobody asks for GoBots.
See, I asked for Transformers. My parents, my mother, went to the flea market and got Transformers. So
Transformers? It was not very progressive of her.
Yeah, it was not even like a regular Transformers, like these flea market version knockoffs that looked like Optimus Prime, but it wasn't Optimus Prime.
I'm sorry. I thought you got people who worked on farms and are also trans.
Oh, that would be awesome.
My mistake.
I don't know. Way more enjoyed that than what I got.
I think we could all agree the Transformers McDonald's Happy Meal toys were the absolute jam.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
They were pretty good.
Like it's an order of fries that turns into a fighting robot. I mean, are you kidding me? I played with that a lot. Second commercial.
I feel like having like a 10-foot tall box of fries is probably giving the game away.
New to Earth. They don't know all the customs. The second commercial is for Cookie Crisp cereal. I think they still make Cookie Crisp. It's very different now.
Yes, they do. They got rid of the cop that police brutality, the criminal, but yes, they do.
And let me talk about it. I wrote this because this is something I miss, the era of cereal mascots that were criminal thieves. Every mascot wanted to steal the breakfast cereal from the children who were trying to eat it. It was a theme. I mean, Lucky from Lucky Charms. Trix.
No, wait.
These guys, the Cookie Crisp.
Trix was the opposite.
Yeah, and the Lucky Charms guy, they were trying to catch him.
Yeah.
Because he had it. He stole it from them.
He didn't steal it from them. That was his.
Yeah. Okay, so the kids are the thieves in that. My point is, it's all involving petty crimes.
Look at those fucking 5-year-olds with that big old pot of gold. Clearly, the leprechaun must have stolen it from them, because who would naturally have a pot of gold? A bunch of fucking 5-year-olds.
Yeah. Dude, my 5-year-old came home with a pot of gold once.
You're going to have to take that back to the cops, right?
Yeah.
No,
maybe good you won't.
Guys, I've already... That's how I got the new house.
Well.
Spent good. Anyway, the Trix Rabbit definitely was trying to steal cereal from children. The Hamburglar, same idea. Trying to steal the hamburgers away from the I'm just saying, more mascots as criminals. Let's do this. What happened to us as a culture that we lost track of the fact that fun children's mascots for junk food should be outside the law? That's what I'm trying to say.
Criminals. Yeah.
What happened to us? We lost track of that.
I feel like Sam Bankman-Fried looks like a cereal mascot.
You know what? He very well could be.
He master does.
Fraud, so that's criminal.
You know what? Okay. He took it too far, though, I would argue.
Yeah. He would be like a King Vitamin type mascot. Like, you're there. We don't like you.
Man, I thought I was going to go all episode without a King Vitamin reference, but here we are.
Yeah.
That's pretty strong. All right. CBS ads now. We got an ad for Muppet Babies, which I didn't realize Muppet Babies was even... I thought Muppet Babies was later in the 80s and early 90s. I did not realize Muppet Babies was a thing in 1984.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either. Like, oh, yeah, that's... I guess that tracks.
I mean, it makes sense. I guess that was, which was it? The Muppets Take Manhattan? Which Muppet movie was it that they introduced the idea of baby Muppets?
That was the third one.
Third one. Which one is that?
Yeah, yes. Muppets Take Manhattan is the third one. Great Muppet.
Yeah. Okay. Too, so. A delightful movie.
Yes.
The Great Muppet Caper, also excellent.
Mm-hmm. Charles Grodin, man. As well. Cannot beat Charles Grodin.
Charles Grodin, man. Crushes. Okay, so we got Muppet Babies. Then we get, this is maybe my favorite ad of the entire, what is this? It's for Federated Video Land of Houston. Seemingly it's
stores.
It's like a pawn shop slash appliance store slash furniture shop. I don't exactly know. I do know that the guy they put in this commercial, who must be the owner,
yes,
thinks that he is the coolest, funniest, most entertaining human being who has ever walked the face of the earth.
He definitely went to prison for something after this commercial.
Chen, can we get a little bit of this guy's spiel? Because it is wild that this, I'm mesmerized. I still don't know what he's advertising.
I vaguely remember these commercials, and they were stores that were, I mean, there were superstores. They're basically like department stores, kind of crossed with like a Costco and a Fry's, you know, just like a big store with all sorts of things in them.
You all know Videoland, but now there's more. Federated Videoland is a Panasonic integrated phone system and answering machine, auto dialing and remote, $99.70. So they said to me, Fred, do something big, something really big for Videoland, for Federated Videoland, something big. So what we did was we flew in a superstore, a giant superstore, just like Star Trek, Star Train, Star Trek, whatever. And from the sky, Federated fell from out of the sky, and Video Federated off into the spot.
Did they just go with the first take? I mean, I feel like he could have done that better.
The 80s. That is Shadow Stevens.
No, was that Shadow Stevens?
Yes,
oh, it was. Oh, I had no idea. Okay. Here's the deal. I'm still right in my assessment, but I actually remember liking Shadow Stevens on Hollywood Squares, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Shadow Stevens, man, do another take, man. He's fumbling every one of those lines.
Well, yes, no, I mean, it's that 80s coked out Robin Williams vibe is what it is. So, you know, it felt fresh, felt hip.
I got 80s coked out morning DJ vibe, but I guess it's Shadow Stevens.
Well, the 80s is just coked out. Like, that was,
man,
there.
I really did not realize that was somebody actually who I knew. That's funny. Okay. Also, there's some sort of weird, very short ad for disabled kids.
Mm-hmm.
Kids who are disabled. Now, they don't take a pro or anti stance.
The Institute for Rehabilitation and Research.
I think that is, might be.
Yeah.
We must study them.
Could be anything.
Could be anything. Okay. Back to Space Ace. The robot has now captured everyone. Just jump right to it. The alien girl really, really wants Dexter. And she ends up like charging and through tugging and pulling, she ends up getting them all free. All three of them fall or jump down into a vent. And Dragula says, don't. First off, the robot is just runs at it like it's a shitty old school robot vacuum. It just keeps banging into the vent over and over again. And I'll legit, I laughed.
That was pretty funny.
I thought it was funny. It just keeps going boom, boom, boom. Dragula's like, stop it, Robo. That vent just goes to the lab. We're fine. You don't need to do whatever it is you're doing, you weirdo. And also this bit. Okay, I love the bit where Blotta, the alien girl, is madly in love with Dexter, infatuated with him, and thinks Space Ace is gross. The part of the bit I'm having trouble with is she is literally watching him while he transforms.
I was going to say that.
And she cannot figure out what the fuck's going on.
I found it funny that not only she did that, but Dracula did the same thing. They're watching him turn and like, oh, where'd the other guy go? Like,
I might not understand why it's happening, but I have a definite handle on what is happening. They're dressed the exact same way. I'm just saying.
I would argue that because they're aliens, they don't know that that's not a thing that humans do. Like, maybe they swap bodies with other, you know, humans. You don't know. It's a crazy universe out there.
Sure.
Would you want to swap bodies with other humans?
In a heartbeat. Are you kidding me right now?
I don't know if I would.
Put me in Delvin Cox's body. Let's see what happens.
Absolutely.
Not like that. Oh, hold on now. That is not what I meant, Robert Clark Chan.
I think the audience can be the judge of that.
Hashtag Ray didn't mean it, or hashtag Inside Delvin. Your choice. That's going to happen. Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to get a whole bunch of hashtags Inside Delvin.
Oh, man. Don't let Rob know about it. Okay, they all get captured by a freeze ray at Ray as soon as they get in the lab. And they say, put Space Ace in the machine. We are going to take his life force to power the monster. At this point, we get the big reveal. He takes the sheet off, and it is the shittiest looking super monster I've ever seen in my entire life. Yeah. It looks like a goober, slightly larger version of Space Ace himself with a shitty haircut.
It's barely a monster, much less a super monster.
Yes.
An ultimate super monster is wildly overselling this thing.
This is, I have a thought about it later. We'll get to it when I get to my notes, but right before the big zap happens, Space Ace turns into Dexter. So the monster now has Dexter's like soul in it, which I'm having trouble following what this thing is, because the monster now is Dexter. So he's weak and puny and can't do anything. He sucks, but he is slightly suggestible to Dragula's commands.
Yeah, which is weird because I don't think that was what the machine was supposed to do. Like, the machine just made him Dexter.
Like, yes.
That changes. That helps. That doesn't help him at all.
I don't know that this Dragula fellow did any sort of experimenting or checking to see if his thing works.
Allegedly, the alien girl was plugged into it before, so in theory, he did a beta test at least.
I mean, she was plugged in, but it does not look like he turned it on at any point.
What are we even doing here?
That is a good question.
And if the entire deal with this machine is that it puts somebody else's brain and then it gets their abilities, like, it seems like it should be strong because it is a large, muscular guy. But when Dexter is put inside of him, he has no strength whatsoever. And this bit doesn't make a lick of sense.
No, it doesn't.
No.
And why is he looking for heroes to power it when ultimately these heroes will just defy him and not do what he wants?
Exactly. They still have their own consciousness.
Completely.
I don't know how many heroes there are in this world that he's like, well, I'll stumble across one in, you know, the great wide universe eventually. Because, of course,
also, yes, but also the monster is infected by the Infanto Ray. So it keeps going back and forth between Space Ace and Dexter. How? What is this world? At this point, he says, okay, monster, toss these girls into space. At which point, the completely predictable happens. And Dexter / Space Ace inside the monster says, no, these are my friends. I will not do that. And I just wrote here, break this down. Okay. So ostensibly, Dragula's plan for world, global, universal conquest. He's got this giant derelict ship, and he's got some ghost helpers. That's a good start. His plan is to take this monster, who's not really much of a monster. Like, he's big, but this is like Shaq big, not King Kong big, right?
Yeah, not even Shaq big, like Mutombo big.
Mutombo big. It's not great. If he finds a strong enough hero, he could put that hero into the body of this monster. The natural strength and abilities of that character will go into the monster and get amplified. Also, that hero has to be very suggestible to doing everything that Dragula wants him to do.
Yes.
So I would argue the best prospect of this plan is he ends up with one super soldier.
Yeah.
How does that take over the uniform?
I thought this would be a like 12,000 foot tall monster, and we
somehow
plug someone in. It's animation, so you could have just drawn that.
Or what if, because it's a very large derelict ship, what if the monster was the size of the ship and was the ship?
Sure.
Yeah. That works.
That's
like
not what we got.
He ends up with John Walker, U.S. agent, at the end of the day.
Not even. We got like a...
Not even.
Like a adequately more stronger version of himself. Not like, like he just lifted some weights for a day. Like, all right, a little bit more tougher. Like, you could have did this yourself.
And then after a bunch of hijinks, Dragula accidentally falls onto the fucking... God, so stupid. He falls onto the other side, and turns on the machine accidentally at the same time and puts his own brain in the monster. And he's like, why didn't I think of that? And I go, Dragula, why didn't you think of that? That was, knowing how this all works, that would have been the first thought.
He didn't think out this plan at all. Not even a little bit.
I'm so upset over this Space Ace cartoon. Because I don't think, much like the Q-Bert episode, I don't think it would have taken a lot of work or, say, craftsmanship to make this work. They just chose not to.
Shoot a picture to you gentlemen real quick, and I just want you to
not one of these.
Here we go.
For a screenshot, just give me your thoughts on it. We're transferring the thoughts, you know, the whatever, soul, life, essence, whatever, into the brain of the super weapon.
Okay.
And I believe that this would be a joke inserted by the animators, because you can see the zap that goes to the brain,
but it also goes
because Dragula was chasing someone and slipped and fell down. The zap that's sucking the soul out of him is coming out of his asshole.
Yeah.
Yes. Here's the deal. I like this bit. I can get behind this bit. That's funny. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. I feel like that couldn't possibly have been an accident. Also, there was no mention of it, so I feel like it was not something that was intended to be caught by the traditional viewers of this kind of thing.
No, very funny. I like it.
Pretty good gag.
At this point, the monster with Dragula's brain inside of it is now chasing them around the ship.
The monster with Dragula's butt juice in it.
Butt juice in it. Thank you. The heroes try to run to the escape pods, which they're like the Jetsons space car. They're not really escape pods so much as they are small commuter vehicles that sort of hover.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of hijinks happen. You know, Dexter turns to Space Ace, overpowers the giant monster to a point. This all ends up with the monster tripping back onto the machine again, and they turn the machine back on to put his brain back into Dragula's own body. And I just this is the point where I wrote, I don't know, I'll be real with you, fam, I don't think this plan was ever going to take over the universe. I'm gonna keep it real.
Yeah,
just not feeling this.
Yeah.
And and this is where I think Space Ace goes a little too far. I don't know what authorizations he has. I don't know exactly how his role in Law and Order works.
ACAB.
But Space Ace says, first off, we're taking you straight to space jail. No trial. No anything. I am specifically taking you to jail for life. And then he blows up the Phantom ship. Yeah. Killing the ghosts and anybody else who's still inside. I don't think the cops should be able to detonate your vehicle after they arrest you.
I feel like it's just the more things change,
the more they stay the same.
Like I would argue that Space Ace at this moment is a bigger criminal than Dragula ever was.
Yeah, but you know, he's got limited immunity.
Yeah, we got to change those laws. Yeah. And the Space Ace budget bloated. I'll say that. And then the cap on this episode is that Blotta is there with Space Ace. And we get a weird reveal about the character of Space Ace that I didn't understand. I don't think the writers even understood until this moment. And because he turns into Dexter on the ship and Blotta says, I'm ready for you to take me to the malt shop. Let's go on our date. And Dexter goes, I never agreed to go out with you on a date. And Kimberly fills him in that you didn't, but Space Ace pimped you out on a date with her, so you have to honor that. So, ostensibly, Space Ace and Dexter are multiple personalities that don't have knowledge of each other, even if they do.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
That was not clear this entire episode, because not once did Dexter or Space Ace ever need to be filled in on details that happened while the other one was in control.
Yeah.
Also, I don't think that's part of the character.
Not at all.
It is now.
And then Kimberly finds it hilarious. This is human trafficking almost.
Yeah, yeah.
It's and Kimberly finds it hilarious that he has to date this hideous alien girl.
I've done worse.
No, look, I mean, listen, Delvin Cox, you don't got to explain nothing to me. We've all made choices.
Yes.
Robert Clark Chan.
I have a head full of butt juice.
And that is where I find no other way that we could possibly send off this episode any better. That is going to do it for this episode. This is Saturday Supercade 1984. That has been Q-Bert and Space Ace. Those of you on Patreon immediately can go up. The episode will go live on our Patreon feed as well as the big old vault. And you can listen to part two of Saturday Supercade with myself, Robert Clark Chan, and Delvin Cox, where we'll be talking about... what are we talking about? Oh, Kangaroo and Donkey Kong. Oh yes. Boy. Oh, if you thought these two bamboozled me, I'm not going to lie. I don't understand the rules of any of the four universes that we deal with in these episodes. These last two are more confusing.
A very different take on Mario, to say the least.
Oh, yes. Again, first iteration of Mario in cartoons, I think.
Yes.
And it is different. Robert Clark Chan, how did you feel about Saturday Supercade?
I did not care for it.
Yes.
Normally, I have a point in most cartoons we watch where I pause it to see how much is left. And sometimes there's a lot left. I didn't even bother for this because I knew it was going to be a slog and I knew it was an hour long or nearly triple the length of time we normally watch something. So I just said, let it wash over me.
Yeah.
Sadly, there were times I had to rewind because I missed very important details or just they were so clunkily done. I needed to make sure I got it right. Saturday Supercade. I would love for this to come back.
No,
absolutely.
With modern games.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like what? Call of Duty?
if they did this, but they did it where it was like Fortnite and like Apex Legends, right? And yeah, why not? Call of Duty?
Would be kind of weird.
God of War? Yeah. But they were like silly Ruby Spears cartoons.
That'd be great.
With just nonsensical characters and worlds that defy logic. Oh my God, Kangaroo has ethical issues out the wazoo.
Oh yeah, kidnapping,
Slavery. Oh, we'll get into it. Oh, there's just even the nice people are horrifying in that world. But you got to go to patreon.com/knowingishalfthepodcast to get a listen to that one. At least for right now. Maybe a couple of years from now it'll drop. The point I'm trying to make is you should go there. Any amount of money at all, $1, gets you in the door. And you can listen to the part two of this episode. If you enjoyed what you heard and you want to hear me get even more apoplectic about what I am watching, that will happen over the next two episodes.
Oh, yes, it will.
That is guaranteed. In the meantime, Delvin Cox, tell the people at home where they can find you and follow you.
You can find me on X, no, Twitter. Fuck that, I'm not saying X. On Delvin_Cox.
I'm not familiar with what that is.
You can check out the Delvin Cox Experience anywhere you get podcasts. And eventually, when I stop being lazy, I will make a Threads account.
There you go. Finally. Finally. Robert Clark Chan, do you have any other shows you'd like to talk about?
Not really.
All right. Well, I'm also on the Who Would Win show. And sometimes Robert Clark Chan shows up. And sometimes Delvin Cox shows up.
Pretty much.
Actually, pretty often. Pretty often do those two things happen. Much to my delight. Go find the Who Would Win show wherever you podcast. Until then, this has been Saturday Super. This is, oh my God, this is an insanely long episode.
This is long enough that we could have split this one up into two.
Seriously. Okay, this is bloated. I hope you got your money's worth. See you on Patreon.
Yes, it's Super K time. Let's have some Super K fun, fun, fun. Come on to Super K time. Join all the Super K fun. Yes, it's Super K time. Let's have some Super K fun, fun, fun. Come on to Super K time. Join all the Super K fun.
Monkey muscle!
Let's have some Super K time.
Supercade. Hello, dear listeners. Do you enjoy playing video games with your best friends? Then I have the pod for you. I'm Philip, host of the Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Each week, my co-host Nave and I break down a cooperative experience in gaming, and we are always looking for new co-op partners to join us. So come play with us on the Gaming Together podcast.
So I'm standing over this toilet taking a piss, and I'm playing my Pokemon, and I dropped it in the toilet. I remember the Game Boy just tumbling into water. And I remember screaming for my mom, trying to get this Game Boy.
Wait, how old are you?
And she yelled at me. She yelled at me.
Oh my God.
Like, traumatized. I was like, no, my Pokemon.
That's Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Come on down, co-op partners.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.